It's almost time. Verizon Small Business Days are coming. From August 5th to the 11th, small and mid-sized businesses can get a tech check and advice on how to get the most out of Verizon Business with guidance on the best solutions for your specific needs. Meet with their experts, get one-on-one advice, free tech checks, and other special offers. Give your business the VIP treatment it deserves. Call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/smallbusiness. That's 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/smallbusiness.
Welcome to Switched on Pop. I'm musicologist Nate Sloan.
And I'm songwriter Charlie Harding.
Charlie, every day we get the same message in our emails, in our Instagram DMs. Literally people accosting me on the street. And you know what they're all saying.
Give me $5.
When are you going to cover Chapel Roan?
5, 6, 7, 8.
But we did cover Chapel Roan back in December. We spoke with her.
Well, Charlie, this is often my response as well. Mm-hmm. Cast back to December 2023, when we had the one and only Chapel Roan on this very program in a candid conversation. You famously described her sound as slumber party pop.
Did I? I don't remember that.
And yet this does not satisfy the people, this response, Charlie.
Yeah.
Because we are living in a different world than December 2023.
Yeah.
Back then, Chapel Roan was averaging 2 to 3 million streams per week.
Nice.
Now, summer 2024, we're talking 68 million streams per week.
Well, almost as much as this podcast.
She has blown up, Charlie.
Yeah.
She is the moment.
Yeah, she's having such a big moment that she has recently communicated that her rise to fame is going so fast that she needs to slow it down because it's getting creepy.
Yes, so it is incumbent for us to return to this artist and give her the full deep dive into her sound that she deserves and that the people are demanding, Charlie.
Okay, so Chapel Roan, who, what, where, when, why, what's going on?
Though she's seen a sort of meteoric rise in the past 6 months, this artist is not an overnight success story. She's been on the come up since she signed a deal with Atlantic Records when she was only 17, then moved from small town Missouri to Los Angeles, then got dropped from her label, went home to Missouri, reinvented herself, returned to LA, and took the world by storm with her slow burning album, The Rise and Fall of a Midwestern Princess. She's got incredible style inspired by drag queens. She's got choreographed dance moves to her songs, but more than anything, she has bops. So this will change by the time this episode drops.
Yeah.
But at the time of this recording, she has 5 songs on the Billboard Hot 100.
Oh.
And I want to go through 4 of them and try and understand why Chapel Roan is the sound of 2024.
Okay. Where do we start?
We start with the highest charting of these songs, Charlie. It's Good Luck, Babe.
Written by friend of the show, Justin Tranter, alongside Daniel Nigro and Kaylee Rose Amstutz, who is Chapel Roan's real name.
This is not only the most popular of Chapel's songs right now. I think it's also a great place to start to try and understand why she has captured our collective imagination. And just starting with this chorus and this title, Good Luck, Babe, it's kind of ironic and detached, but then it's also sung with so much passion and commitment. How do we get here? We got to go back to the beginning of this track.
Okay.
Let's set the scene.
It's fine. It's cool. You can say that we are nothing, but you know the truth. And guess I'm the fool. With their arms out like an angel through the car sunroof.
It's fine. It's cool. You can say that we are nothing, but you know the truth. And guess I'm the fool. with her arms out like an angel through the car sunroof.
It's very majestic.
Here's reason number one that Chapel Roan is the sound of 2024. It's these lyrics at the very start of Good Luck, Babe. Mm-hmm. These are so hyper-specific, imagistic, like you said. Mm. And yet they also roll off the tongue so effortlessly. They're so perfectly matched to the melody. They sound like normal speech in a mm-hmm. way. Mm-hmm. So there's this combination of being these perfectly chiseled diamond-like turns of phrase that get etched into your memory banks, and yet they sound so casual almost, to borrow the name of another Chapel Roan song.
It's fine. It's cool.
And it's also setting up a dynamic that we are going to hear throughout Chapel Roan's discography, which is this tension between her desire and the object of her affection kind of looking somewhere else. There's this star-crossed quality to a lot of these songs that you can hear just at the very start of this, right? These two people, Chapel Roan and her lover, are like not in the same place.
Yeah.
And this tension just increases, just ratchets up as we get to the pre-chorus.
I don't want to call it off, but you don't want to call it love. An incredible pairing where there's so much tension between two people.
I love how short this pre-chorus is, Charlie.
Yeah.
It's only four measures. It goes by so fast, but it does its job because at the very end, you get this tension that you were just describing, and then Chapel Roan sails up her vocal register to hit this chorus. And there's reason number two why Chapel Roan is the sound of 2024. It's the vocal performance that we're hearing in this chorus. Mm. By the time we get to this title line, Good Luck, Babe, we've actually ascended a full octave up from where we started.
Mm.
That very first line, it's fine, it's cool.
It's fine, it's cool.
That was down at F and D in the bottom of her range. Now we're at F and D, a full octave up. This is not easy to do. And it sounds so crystalline clear when she sings it. It's a real send-off, right? It's like, good luck, babe. If you think you can quit this relationship, ha! I laugh at you. I'm hanging out here in the upper octave of my voice without a care in the world. You go and find this happiness you think you can.
The performance obviously also mirrors the directionality of the music. I love that when at the start she says, it's fine, it's cool, whatever. The music is so simple, right? Very basic indie drum groove, nice little synth keys. I've actually tried to recreate this song. And I can't do it because the sounds are so, it's so simple, but they're so perfect.
Yeah.
And just gradually, moment by moment, they're growing and building. And she's slowly going up her range to this point of, before you know it, the whole thing feels like it's this orchestrated symphony.
Yeah. I love that you pointed that out, Charlie, because I do think, as we listen to these songs, this figure of Dan Nigro in the background is so important.
Mm.
And he's almost masterful at not drawing attention to himself. There aren't a lot of musical choices that make you go, oh, wow, what was that sound? You know?
Yeah.
It's so subtle and effective because it's just perfectly supporting the message of the song. And I think this is reason number three for Chapel Roan's success. It's the immaculate, perfect production by Dan Nigro. Mm. Check out how the voices overlap on this chorus, Charlie. It's like As soon as Chaperone finishes singing Good Luck Babe, another Chaperone pops up and sings Good Luck Babe. They're overlapping in this way.
There's her voice layering on top, one after the other, with the symphony orchestra building behind her, supporting it.
And like you said, Charles, it's almost like that symphony has come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
So organically.
You only really notice it when it drops out in the second verse. You're like, whoa. There's this immense difference from where we've begun.
There's a lot of care and craft that goes into these songs. And a really sterling example in Good Luck Babe comes when we get to the bridge. Reason number four, Chaperone is the sound of 2024. This artist knows how to write a bridge.
This bridge, like the whole song, is exemplifying the distance in the relationship where the narrator is infatuated and the other person is not. And so you have these two different energies, one where it's fine, it's cool, kind of like even like the second half of the bridge here, too, where it kind of like chills out. And then you have the like really heated emotional thing happening at the same time.
This bridge is like a cresting wave that you just get caught up in.
And then crashes.
That's right. And when it crashes, all those beautiful symphonic strings just get replaced with, like, panting. It's like, it's so primal in a way. Mm-hmm. There's, like, so much delicacy and sophistication here. And then it's also so kind of naked and raw. And I feel like that brings us to our final reason, reason number five, if you're counting at home, why Chaperone is the sound of the moment. Her narratives of queer desire and sexual awakening. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They are so palpable, Charlie.
Mm-hmm. They're so numerous. You can kiss 100 boys in bars. This is it's scintillating.
Right. You have to read between the lines, but when you do, you realize this is a narrative about queer desire. Chaperone is trying to tell someone that they can't deny their feelings for her, even if they think they're attracted to a member of the opposite sex. And there's something transgressive and radical about hearing that in a pop song.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've got five reasons. Number one, lyrics of assassin-like precision in their turns of phrase. Mm-hmm. Two, production that perfectly supports the song's message. Three, vocal performances of superb quality and impressive range. Four, bridges that just don't quit. And five, narratives of queer desire and sexual discovery. All right?
Got it.
Let's see these play out in three other songs that are currently on the Billboard Hot 100, all right? Next up is H-O-T-T-O-G-O.
H-O-T-T-O-G-O.
5, 6, 5, 6, 7, 8.
All right, so once again, at the very start of this song, we have a line that is just cut from marble. I could be the one or your new addiction. It's all in my head, but I want nonfiction. I mean, oh, it's so clever. But also doesn't even call attention to itself. Like, we're just on to the next, you know? It's why these songs reward repeat listenings, because there's a lot of lyrical density here.
I also just want to add in here that this is a very nostalgic song to me. Like, peak 80s synth pop kind of vibe.
Indeed.
Sort of Devo-esque. And then you have the sort of chanting quality that reminds me of a song like Hey Mickey.
Hell yeah.
That's one of Chapel's things. Like, there's a lot of spoken, sort of chanted material. So it feels musically comfortable, nostalgic of the past, but with her unique pen.
The harmony here is like nefariously simple. Just two chords oscillating back and forth. The one and the four, the tonic and the subdominant, and we just go back and forth. It kind of gives you that nostalgic simplicity that you crave, Charlie.
Might I even throw out there, We Built This City by Starship?
We built this city on rock and roll. I don't want the world, but I'll take this city. Who can blame a girl? Call me hot, not pretty.
Am I crazy? I take this city. We built this city.
No, you're not, Charlie. You have successfully identified two songs that both use the word city. Bravo. They said it couldn't be done. And here you are out there proving them wrong.
Oh, God.
Let's continue with the song. Because, Charlie, we haven't even gotten to the frickin' chorus of Hot to Go.
H-O-T-T-O-G-O.
This is one of those lines you hear one time and you remember till your dying day. You'll be like calling your grandchildren to your side on your deathbed and saying, lean closer. And they'll be like, what? What is it? And you'll be like, just remember, H-O-T-T-O-G-O. So I have no profound reading of these lyrics, Charlie. I think that's exactly not the point. But it does bring us to one of these other reasons, right, for Chapel Row being the sound of 2024 and a certain kind of continuity that is being created through these songs. Because these lyrics are continuing this theme of one-sided affection, yearning unrequited, of explicit sexuality. It is so relatable and yet so fun at the same time.
But aren't you at all concerned about the fact that it feels like it's 199 degrees? This song is unsafe. This is far too hot. It's like 199 degrees
when you do it with me. That's okay, Charlie. You can wear your oven mitts when you listen to this, okay? You'll be okay.
Okay, okay.
And I feel like this playbook works so well because it's kind of this universal experience of like wanting someone so badly that you're like burning up, but it's delivered in this way that is kind of fun and cheeky and empowering at the same time.
Hurry up, it's getting cold. Hurry up, it's time for supper. Order up, I'm hot to go. If this song were not great, it would be a jingle for a fast food restaurant.
That's a bleak idea, Charlie. If Papa John's actually uses this for a jingle, I don't want to live in that world.
No,
but you have drawn attention to another one of our reasons for Chapel Row being the sound of the moment, right? Another impeccable bridge.
Yep.
And another kind of gobsmacking vocal performance. How will these themes be continued on the next two songs we're going to listen to? Stick around after a brief break to find out.
It's almost time. Verizon Small Business Days are coming. From August 5th to the 11th, small and mid-sized businesses can get a tech check and advice on how to get the most out of Verizon Business with guidance on the best solutions for your specific needs. Meet with their experts, get one-on-one advice, free tech checks, and other special offers. Give your business the VIP treatment it deserves. Call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/smallbusiness. That's 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/smallbusiness.
Hello, Deadpool here. We're very excited to be joining you, but we should set the table correctly.
We're mostly going to make enemies with Disney and make a lot of jokes at Hugh's expense.
Come again.
So sit back, relax, while we travel to a place where grown men and women walk around in tights and act like it's not a giant cultural cry for help. Because this
is cinema.
Shut up.
Oh my God.
Marvel Studios' Deadpool and Wolverine in cinemas Thursday, July 25th.
Today explained, Sean Rahm's firm standing outside of the White House to ask Americans how they feel about a historic moment, their president dropping out of the presidential race.
Mixed feelings. I think it's sad, but overall, I think he might be making the right decision.
I'm sad to see him drop out, but I think it needed to be done.
So I think, like, hopefully it brings out more young voters.
Joe Biden is considered the Antichrist.
I want him to stay in. This way I know Trump would have won. Now it's up in the air.
But I just feel like, is America ready for a woman and also a black woman? So that's what scares me.
No, I just don't really see Kamala or really anyone else being a viable threat to Trump.
Kamala.
We need the facts, man. I don't know. You feel me? Like, I think it's something fishy going on, but, you know, don't quote me. Yeah.
I'm going to quote you. We're going to ask Vox's Andrew Prokop and David Axelrod how they feel on Today Explained.
Amen.
All right, Charlie, we've made it to Red Wine Supernova.
Best title of a song ever.
Yes, Charlie, the song titles across this album are works of art unto themselves. Femininomenon, Red Wine, Supernova, Super Graphic, Ultra Modern Girl. There's such a specificity to these songs that is like immediately apprehensible and really draws you into their world. Another thing that draws you into the world of this song is the way that everything drops out for the chorus. What at one point in time, Charlie, we might have even called an anti-chorus. Mm. At least until Chapel Roan says, let's pick it up now, and the beat comes right back in. Let's pick it up now. I don't care if you're a stoner. Red wine supernova. Fall right into me. It's a moment that accentuates this theme of yearning desire that I think we've noticed throughout these songs, because it finds Chapel kind of alone with her desire. Mm. And then just when things could get kind of too bleak and lachrymose, the beat comes back in, and it's that balance of triumph and trial that is like always animating these songs.
Mm.
I think the power of this chorus is also intensified by some very deliberate rhyme schemes in the verse. Like, if we go back to the pre-chorus, here's the first line we hear. In the hallway waiting for ya. Mm. Let's skip ahead a little bit. I just want to get to know ya. We're still building up to the chorus here, Charlie. And when we do, in the hallway, waiting for you. I just want to get to know you. Baby, why don't you come over? Red Wine Supernova. She's been laying the groundwork for this chorus before we even realized it was coming, like a jet plane taking off.
It's like the anticipation of, I want you to come over, waiting in the hallway. All this anticipation is fulfilled when the chorus arrives. We have this great line about the Red Wine Supernova, blush in the face, allusion to the song Champagne Supernova by Oasis, and
yes,
it is all fulfilled.
Except, is it, Charlie? I feel like that's the puzzle of this song. Is this fulfillment, or is it a dream of fulfillment?
Mm.
Will we get our answer in another iconic Chapel Roan bridge? Let's find out.
Ha 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 ha. I don't think that's a typical magic wand that she's talking about.
Let's get freaky, get kinky. Let's make this bed get squeaky. I mean, chef's kiss to that rhyme. I don't know, Charlie. I feel like this song is pleading for someone to come over, and we never know if they actually do, which is so perfectly Chapel Roan, because there's, again, that sense of like just kind of simmering, burning desire.
I feel like this uncertainty is even emphasized in the chorus, where our narrator is swooning, feeling this overwhelming feeling of this red wine supernova, while the other person happens to be a stoner. And so you have this contrast of what substance are you into, and suggests this sort of this little bit of a disconnect between these two people.
Yeah, kind of like you drink tea, I drink coffee.
This is true.
It's the source of our power. Charles,
yeah,
take a trip with me to the Pink Pony Club, our final Chapel Roan song of the moment.
Okay.
Not to say there aren't many more we could discuss in depth,
sure,
but I think this is a powerful one to end on, because in many ways this is the origin story of this artist. Mm. Pink Pony Club, let's go to the chorus. A little backstory about this song. This was actually the first collaboration between Chapel Roan and Dan Nigro way back in 2020. Mm-hmm. So that gives us some perspective on how this whole album and Good Luck Babe, which was not part of the album, but a separate single, but still how this catalog of songs really, I think, gestated pretty slowly. Mm-hmm. And again, even though Chapel Roan seems like this kind of overnight success story, is it's not that at all.
Yeah.
It's been a slow grinding ride to the top. In fact, I remember last year, Chapel Roan performed at a student music festival at USC.
No way.
And one of my students told me about it. They were so excited. Chapel Roan is coming. I was like, who is that? Like, that doesn't mean anything to me. And fast forward another year, and she's the biggest thing on planet Earth.
Yeah.
But it's not an overnight story.
Right. Oh, no.
This is like a set of themes and a set of personal self-discoveries that she's been trying to make, that she's shared in intimate detail across this album and songs like Good Luck, Babe.
Yeah, I mean, certainly here you have a song in 2020 about her really sort of coming into her own sexuality and talking about going out to a club in West Hollywood, a famously queer positive space. These are themes that continue to unwind in the songs that we're hearing that are more contemporary. But yeah, she's been doing this for many years now.
We'll keep listening to Pink Pony Club, but quick diversion.
Yeah.
Because this song, I said this is kind of her origin story, both of her as a person, as a sexual being. Mm-hmm. As someone who's moved from Missouri to LA, left behind her Midwestern princess identity and embraced this new flamboyant pink pony identity. Our colleague at Vox, Constance Grady, wrote a great explainer about Chapel's story. And she points out that this song also was a new musical direction for Chapel Roan. Before Pink Pony Club and this collaboration with Dan Nigro, this is not what this artist sounded like. If you listen to a song from 2017 called Good Hurt, we hear a very different kind of sonic approach.
I know I'm impatient. Bite your tongue while I do it for ya. You can taste hesitation, mouth-to-mouth conversations. And I've even tried medication, cold-hearted frustration. You can call it foundation, I'll call you when I'm wasted.
Wow. Okay, so, you know, contemporary Chapel Roan is known for dressing in drag and being incredibly performative. And yet, the way that she sings now is so raw, and so it sounds like herself. This older recording that you're bringing up, it sounds like the most generic indie pop Spotify playlist, like super intense cursive singing, a lot of auto-tune. It doesn't sound like anyone in particular. It's very generic.
If you want a extensive explanation of cursive singing, go find our episode from last summer about the topic And you're right, Charlie, which is not to say this is a bad song.
Nope.
I think it's quite powerful in a lot of ways.
It's performative.
But you're right. It is. It's not distinctive in the same way. It's like her performing an established style.
Exactly. That's what it is. She's performing pop rather than like just being a pop star.
So Pink Pony Club is both like this personal coming out story.
Hmm.
And it's also kind of this musical coming out story.
Hmm.
It's gonna cause a scene. She sees her baby girl. I know she's gonna scream. God, what have you done? You're a pink pony girl. And you dance at the club. Oh, mama.
Like that is a pivotal moment, I think.
Mm.
This album is called The Rise and Fall of a Midwestern Princess, and I feel like this moment is the fall, so to speak. The fall of the old identity and the birth of the new one. You know, shedding the past, rebuking your parents to a degree, and embracing this new identity, this new community, and this new sound that is distinctive and wholly yours.
Okay, I've completely lost track of the five reasons that Chapel Roan is the sound of 2024. But
reason
I
number
feel
one. Do you want a refresher? No. It's okay.
I think we can leave behind your listicle. She's won me over.
No, we've been going through. We've been talking about them this whole time, Charlie. Don't feign obtuseness on my podcast.
I'm just dumb. I'm just a simple man. I can only hold three things in my head at the same time.
Pink Pony Club.
I got it.
There we go. Let's just that's plenty.
Done.
Now, after listening to this constellation of songs, I think we've established a number of lyrical and musical reasons why Chapel Roan is the sound of 2024. We've heard her lyrical precision, her brilliant cataloging of desire and sexual discovery, delivered with a voice that is clear and bright, supported by perfect, subtle production choices, all delivered with the sound that's been marinating for years. You know, this is an exquisite formula for success, but it's not the only thing. If we zoom out, this music comes at a key moment in our socio-political landscape when queer and trans rights are under assault all over the country and the world.
Yeah, we're living in a moment where drag performance is being stigmatized and in some cases outlawed by conservative pundits and politicians.
So these songs about unabashed yearning and queer desire aren't just personal stories.
Right.
They're political ones as well. And they're so effective because of their unbridled power. And Charlie, they are just so much fun. Credits in 5, 6, 7, 8. SWITCHEDONPOB.
Switch on Pop is engineered by Brandon McFarlane, edited by Art Chung, illustrations by Aris Gottlieb. Our executive producer is Nishat Kurwa, a member of the Vox Media Podcast Network and a production of Vulture, which is part of New York Magazine. You can subscribe at nymag.com/pod. You can find more of our podcast at switchedonpop.com and on social media at switchedonpop.
We'll see you next week with a brand new episode. And until then, thanks for listening.
If you've been enjoying this podcast, here's a look into what else is happening at New York Magazine. I'm Corey Sika, and I'm here with Reeves Wideman, who has written about the American obsession with NDAs. Where did they come from? Why are they everywhere? And are they good for anything besides covering up for abusers? After you poked around at NDAs for a while, do you see NDAs used mostly as tools of abuse and coercion? You see positive results? Like, where did you land on NDAs?
I think in most situations, it is used as a way to sort of claim power, but not even necessarily to like to do a bad thing. It's just kind of it is this sort of boring standard tool in the toolbox of corporations or powerful people. But now it's being used on the people at the bottom. It's the warehouse workers at Amazon being made to sign them. Or like I was just trawling job listings while doing this story, and there were NDAs for forklift drivers and like people working in butcher shops. And I think on the one hand, it's just kind of like, well, I might as well. There's no downside for me to do this. But it is also just another way that you sort of keep your employees or people you get into a relationship with, that you sort of keep your thumb on them. So I do think it is, at the end of the day, the people who are giving them out by and large are trying to control someone.
Do you think that they're going to become standard for like literally every interaction and job interview and possibly relationship as well? Or do you think they're just finally going to die or become outlawed? Like, where do we go from here?
You know, it was corporations first, then it was celebrities, then it was just rich people who aren't famous, but they also want to protect their privacy. The next frontier is people like you and me. And are we going to start giving them to their partners? You know, I think some people are going to start experimenting with it. It doesn't take much to go online, download a free NDA and without even consulting a lawyer and hand it over to someone. I did, as a joke, send one to my girlfriend. She hasn't signed it yet, but I at least sent it. So
that's Reeves Wideman, who may or may not be single soon. You could read his work on NDAs in our beautiful print magazine in your own home or on nymag.com/lineup.